Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Good morning to all of you. Very happy Tuesday.
Hold on a second.
You're doing well.
I'm going to finish my prayer for Clint Capella's plantar fascia.
Is that what he has?
He's got plantar fasciitis. Yeah.
Ooh, yuck.
Reportedly.
What's that like to be? Have you ever had plantar fascia?
Yeah, it sucks. Oh.
Did you play with it?
Feels like somebody's stabbing you in the heel.
Eek.
Yeah, I played in it. I played with it. But it's also, for a football player, you only have to really gear it up once a week. It's different than running up and down a hard court 30-plus minutes a night.
Is it a shootable pain? Can you jam a needle in there to kill the pain?
Not necessarily.
It doesn't feel like the heel is a part of the body where there's a lot of meat down there to jam a big needle into.
Yeah. And we never tried that. Plus, I had heel spurs with it, too, so that makes it worse. But I know it's a painful circumstance, especially for a basketball player. Where you got to run up and down the court on your 6'10" frame. It's an issue, and it's also something that Capella is dealing with this year in that he's just running a lot more. They were the slowest team in the league for 2 years with Chris Paul around.
I know. Capella's probably like, I love this guy.
Stand around for a little while.
80-year-old point guard. This is beautiful.
Let these guys dribble and then ISO it out with the last 5 seconds
the
on the shot clock.
And dunk.
Have plenty of lead time to get back.
Beautiful.
If you need to. Now it's run back forth. They're second in the league in pace.
Yeah. No, that's tough on a big guy. Now let's be honest here, Seth. As we welcome you all in here on a Tuesday morning, let's be honest. The plantar fascia at this point, it would appear that with respect to Clint Capella, the only thing it's impacting for the Rockets is what his trade value is. It is widely expected that Clint Capella will be dealt by the middle of the day on Thursday.
I think he's going to be happy as hell about it. I think he needs a new environment. I think he needs to stop being the guy that, for whatever reason, decided to talk smack about the Warriors and then suck against the Warriors. He was sick, but still, don't be talking smack if you're gonna get sick.
Yeah, if your
finals.
Immune system's gonna shut down, you can't be talking smack. Your immune system is part of you.
How about a little less smack talk, a little bit more taking some of that airborne or whatever?
That's right. That's right.
Let's see, the coldies. Get yourself a lozenge.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking all that smack. Can't talk so much smack with a lozenge in your mouth.
Get a flu shot. Do something.
Yeah. Watch out for the coronavirus.
Right. So Clint Capella, it looks like he's gonzo. They're talking to a few teams. The Rockets are. The Hawks, the Celtics, I think, are the two teams that I saw. And I see a bunch of packages coming back of players that I have to ask my sons about. My sons are sending me these. Hey, look at this Clint Capella trade proposal, and it's like Romeo something or other, this guy, that guy. I'm like, just tell me if these guys are any good.
Well, and everybody's saying, well, and you got to at some point get a center back, right? You got to play with a center. But then the more you watch this small ball lineups, and you know the Rockets passed.
Yeah.
And you know that they're very willing to do things that are out of the norm and unconventional. This is one of the smallest small ball lineups that has ever existed since they started allowing tall people in the NBA. So more people started being fed well in, I'd say, the 1960s.
If this is what they're going with.
They invented nitrogen fertilizer.
If this is what they're going with, P.J. Tucker is going to die by March. If P.J. Tucker has to play center for 32 minutes a night, he will not survive, I don't think.
You could reference the death lineup for the Warriors all you want. It's not like that was their. It's not like that was their go-to everyday lineup.
Well,
dude.
PJ's not Draymond Green.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I think Draymond Green's a little overrated. I think we're learning that this year when he's the best player on a team that's firmly entrenched in the upper part of the lottery, the very very worst part of the lottery.
But I think he was overrated by people that thought he was more than I think most
Draymond?
People understood that he wasn't going to be a guy that was going to drive a team to championship.
No, but he was being called a top 15 or 20 player in the league by people. He was making the all-star team. I don't think he's an all-star. I think he's a souped up role player is what he is. So but I think he's better than PJ Tucker. He's a more versatile player than PJ. PJ Tucker's not handling the ball in the open court like Draymond does sometimes. So I do think they need to get a center back in this deal just to have somebody not named Isaiah Hartenstein or Tyson Chandler, who's over 6'8".
Yeah, Hartenstein, and for whatever reason, D'Antoni just is not a fan of Hartenstein. And
he may have to become one.
We can't quite figure it out.
He may have to learn to love him.
Why? D'Antoni's like, I wonder if there's some small part of D'Antoni that's like, well, you know what? I've only got 3 months left
that's
here.
That's true. he's like a prisoner just marking off the days.
What if he actually loves Hartenstein, but he's planning on taking him with him somehow?
Some other team?
Yeah,
he's muting his value?
He might actually
think, as a throw-in.
He might think Hartenstein is the future of the league.
That would be devious. Meanwhile, so that's Clint Capela. Meanwhile, the Astros have a new GM. Seth, I'm going to let you break this one down since it feels like Ivy Leaguers are infiltrating Major League Baseball, and you being an Ivy Leaguer, what's your excitement level over James Click?
It's not James Glick. James Click.
James Click, which sounds like a made-up name. But he spent over a decade with the Tampa Bay Rays, about 15 years approximately with the Tampa Bay Rays in their organization, in their front office. We know the Rays were a super analytically based front office because they had a payroll that was about the equivalent of the Astros' middle infield payroll. If I'm James Click, you're coming into an environment that probably feels kind of familiar in terms of what the philosophy is there, but you're doing it with more resources.
Right, and I guess the only thing I would wonder about or worry about is, okay, are guys like Petulia or any of the other people that were there, are they going to feel like they were jilted? Click just simply has more experience and has been around it longer 30. Than Petulia. Petulia's a young guy, which, look, and we've seen this in baseball. Multiple people that are 30 years old or younger becoming GMs of teams, but it just makes a whole lot more sense. Yeah. I am intrigued by kind of the decision-making process, and I'm eager to hear from him about how you make that leap to saying, oh, okay, I'm going to go to a team that's kind of got a blight on it right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of people around baseball don't like or respect. And also one that has, I think within the personnel community in baseball, kind of is up against it. Like there are a lot of people in the scouting community that just flat out don't like the Astros. I wonder if he's thinking, okay, I'm going to change that. I'm going to be different than Luno. Luno was just out there on the cutting edge of a whole lot of things. Some of that included not having a whole lot of respect for human scouts or not necessarily seeing the need for it.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where Click is on that. And I went back and almost tried to read some of his articles from Baseball Prospectus.
They used to write for Baseball Prospectus.
Yeah. So, but it was back in like 2003, 2004, where it feels right. Like it was might as well have been like 7 decades ago in terms of the way baseball has advanced.
Yeah, this is some really riveting stuff. You sent me the link to his page that has all of his articles on it. This is some really riveting stuff.
We'll have to go through those later and figure out which one's the most scintillating. Which one is closest to the Super Bowl halftime show?
Yeah, taking one. This is a title of an article by James Click. Taking one for the team. When does it make sense to sacrifice? Part three.
Well, that sounds...
Part three, Jonesy.
Sounds like, you know what that is? Just like in the movie A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
That's applying game theory to... going after women in a bar. Taking one for the team is the equivalent of being somebody's wingman.
Okay.
We used to call him Una Granada. If you're willing to jump on a grenade, you know, for your buddy, you're willing to talk to the grumpy friend so that you can have success and glory with
that's what this is about?
Yeah, that's what that's about.
Okay.
That's it.
I do need to click on some of these articles because they look really, really boring.
That's young kids out there, if you want to be a great friend, that's one of the most noble things you can do for a friend is to talk to the grumpy friend.
On the grenade.
Just be and no, it's not you can't let the grumpy friend know that you're doing it out of duty.
Right.
You've got to actually engage with her and actually have a good conversation.
That's right. Yeah. So, Seth, I was on our friend Ross Boland's podcast last week.
I sent him a gift.
Dropped over the weekend. Yes, you did.
I'll tell you what it is at the end of the segment.
Ross is Ross lives in Houston. He is he's probably in his early 30s, I think. Very successful podcaster. Podcasts about
a
number of things. Yeah, Total Frat Move was his book that he wrote. New York Times bestseller. He's got his own podcast now, and he's doing very well. And I've been on his podcast. This is the second time I've been on.
He's a professional podcaster.
He's a professional podcaster. That's right. Got a studio and everything up there in Austin. But he's from here. He's from Houston.
Yeah.
So I forget what exactly triggered him reaching out to me on Twitter. It might have been the hiring of Dusty Baker. It was something last week. Oh no! It was the announcement by Cal McNair that Bill O'Brien is indeed the general manager. So
Ross. Bizarre.
Ross, who can get, he can get a little concerned sometimes about the Houston sports scene, had me on his podcast to ask me the question, what is the vibe on the ground in Houston right now about the overall sports scene? Because for a city, as you've pointed out many times, Seth, that was on the cusp of a quarterback away from a golden age, that there were some dark clouds not all that long ago with the firing of Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch, with the Texans blowing a 24-point lead in a playoff game. The Rockets that week decided to lose four games in a row. It was rough times. Here was the comparison I made to Ross, and let me see if you agree with this. You know those like superhero movies or Transformer movies that for the last 45 minutes of the movie, it's basically either superheroes and villains, or in the case of Transformers, large machines tearing up an entire city in a battle.
Right.
Where it looks like 9/11 times 10 at the end of a movie.
And at the end, they win, and you're like, at what cost?
Right.
Like, great, Robert Downey Jr., you destroyed an entire city.
Right.
Okay.
But you won.
Yeah.
But you beat some, you beat some villain.
But now you can rule the ashes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, good. So you feel the same way about that I do.
I'm doing a running tally through all those. I'm like, that's like $2 billion in that one building alone.
Exactly.
Numbers from like the World Trade Center, like times 1,000, and we're acting like this is a good thing?
Okay, this is good. This is why I enjoy doing the show with you. So you watch these, but while some watch these movies and go, boy, this is awesome, these superheroes, these machines, you and I are looking at it more pragmatically saying, what the hell are they doing to this city, and who's going to clean this stuff up?
Yeah.
What I compared it to was Houston. Was that if there were a deleted scene, or if they had just extended the movie, say 10 minutes after the heroes all won, and maybe the 10 minutes worth of footage, but maybe 2 weeks chronologically within the movie, where you're starting to sift through the dust and starting to rebuild some things, clean off the streets, stuff like that. That's the stage we're in right now with Houston sports. I feel like I feel like we're through the darkest part, and now we're through the part where we're kind of sifting through the rubble, rebuilding some of the buildings. The Astros have hired Dusty Baker and now James Click.
Uh-huh.
The Rockets seem to have found something that's at least going to win some games here, and we'll see what they do at the trade deadline. The Texans are what they are. It's not.
We'll be burying the corpses of like Brian Gain and Clint Capela in an unmarked
AJ
pile
Hinch,
out somewhere.
Jeff Luhnow.
Burning
them in a pier like in Game of Thrones after the battle against the White Walkers.
Pyre.
Yeah, I mispronounce a lot of words.
I'm not driving out of Galveston to do it in a pier.
So that's where I felt we are right now. Like, we're coming out of the darkest part of it, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Okay.
Is that an accurate assessment?
I think so.
Have I captured the vibe?
I suppose so. I'm not so sure about that, just because with the Astros, you have this two-year window now where there's a little bit of uncertainty as to just how much of a difference does this is going to be a great experiment for just how much of a difference does a baseball manager make these days? Because the analytics folks would tell you that it doesn't matter much at all. But I think that a lot of the analytics people would also tell you, okay, in key and critical moments, it does matter, especially when you're talking about Game 7 of the World Series. Do you leave Yu Darvish in too long? Okay, then that seems to be you might not affect the total number of wins in a season, but in that moment, it might have affected whether or not you won a game. So if all of a sudden we're sitting here with a bunch of managerial errors on baseball, I'll feel like the wreckage is still kind of afoot.
Okay.
If the Texans' offense is a middle-of-the-road offense, I'm going to be the classic whining about my middle-class existence. And I get three meals a day, but they're not tasty enough.
Right.
The Rockets, I'm okay with until we see just exactly what happens at the trade deadline.
Trade deadline, and I just think it's a very balanced Western Conference. I think ultimately the Rockets are just gonna, whatever the star power of Russell Westbrook and James Harden can do in the postseason, that's how far they're going to go. This is interesting. You had a tweet from Stroh's fan I know that says he's not even interested in spring training because he's so spent.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny you asked this question.
I don't remember how he said it exactly.
Boy, I see something like that, and I say to myself, man, I'm as pumped up for baseball season as I've ever been. And yet, I was downtown yesterday. I had to go pick up a jersey at the Astros team store. Mm-hmm. And I ran into I won't say who it is, but I ran into a friend of ours, mutual, someone you and I both know, who was down there talking to the Astros about trying to get out of his season tickets.
Oh, really?
In part because he splits them with three other people who have all said they're out on the Astros.
Oh, really?
I found that strange. I that that
That there's still, so there's people that are at least in a big group of season ticket holders. Pretty good seats, I'm guessing.
Section 105, okay. So down the left field line.
Okay.
But I wonder, just I do wonder, maybe the way I feel, and I think you feel, you said you're really excited about 2020. Maybe we're in the minority. I have no idea.
Yeah, I guess in, you know, if you're a business, you're going to be sensitive to, hey, if it's 20% of people, that's a big, big deal. We might sit here and like, hey, let's put out a Twitter poll. Hey, look at this. 90% of people support the Astros still. Yeah, but if 10% of season ticket holders don't support the Astros, that's a big deal. That's a huge chunk of...
It's like 4,000 people.
Yeah, that's 4,000 season tickets perhaps that you're losing out on. I think also, from what I learned about the whole Kaepernick era, is it's not the rank and file season ticket holders that they worry about necessarily.
Yes.
It's
sweet holders.
In the NFL, the sweet holders, and especially the corporate sweet holders. If all of a sudden people are accusing your business of identifying with something that they don't approve of, the corporate sweet holders and the corporate sponsors start to think about different places to spend their money and different places to put their advertising and all of that. And that's where things get dicey. So I wonder if any corporate sponsors and or suite holders have pulled out because of this.
Yeah. I would be willing to bet that at least a small portion of them have. You know, there is, it's a, as you would say, a non-zero number.
I only say that to aggravate you, though.
I like it. I've adopted it. Tom Brady, there are odds out. They put odds out. We saw this on the in email. I saw this in an email yesterday in our post-show meeting. And my crazy trade proposal, by the way, was something that they were talking about on Damon Amanda Lara's show in the hour leading up to our show today. Did either of you guys leak my crazy trade proposal to Damon Amanda Lara so he could steal my content for today? Because I had this in the rundown yesterday. Are either you, Seth, or you, Jonesy, leaking things to the show before?
Not to Damon Amanda Lara.
Okay.
Damon Amanda Lara, the biggest, last time I talked to him was after I got in an altercation on Radio Row while he was live on radio. And
was he nearby?
Oh, he was like 6 inches away from it.
Oh,
he was
really?
Trying to do his radio show. He was trying to do his solo radio show.
Was he angry with you?
No. He thought it was. He just started doing play by play on the.
Oh, that's
confrontation,
right.
I suppose. Yeah.
He seems like a good guy. I like Damon.
Oh, he's very smooth. Yeah.
Yeah. He is very smooth.
Very good voice, and he's very smooth.
He is. Yeah. Yeah. He's one of those guys that doesn't look like his voice. You know what I mean? He's got kind of a you know deep. You know, very very over the top kind of voice. I don't think he's a large person,
but he still looks like a man's man in a lot of ways. Whereas Adam Shine looks like the kid that you know you used to pay to do your homework, but then he starts talking and he's like, "Hey," he looks like Milhouse,
really,
but he sounds like
Milhouse,
Rush Limbaugh, or something. Like his voice is just booming.
Yeah. So the trade proposal that we were first of all, these odds on Brady and where he could go. Somebody put out odds on where he could go anywhere in the league other than New England. So there are odds on all 31 teams as to where he could wind up. For those wondering, it would be 66-1 that he winds up in Houston. There is no chance he winds up in Houston. It's also 66-1. That he wind up in San Francisco, and which is, you know, which you, I think before the Super Bowl, you would have said, well, that's crazy. They're in the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo.
But I also think there's been a little bit of an overreaction about just where they are with Jimmy Garoppolo. It's not like Garoppolo is a horrendous quarterback or anything. He's just clearly and decidedly not Pat Mahomes.
Right. He's in that Andy Dalton tier. He's a souped up Andy Dalton is what he is. He's an Andy Dalton that wins a lot more football games, and he's on a better team and with a better franchise, obviously, than the Cincinnati Bengals. But when we were talking in our post-show meeting yesterday, that's when I got that email. So I'm just looking at him, and I said the magic words, what if?
Mm-hmm.
The two magic words, what if? What if the San Francisco 49ers decided to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo, whether it would be just move on or trade him somewhere maybe and get some draft capital for him? Because here's the thing, Jimmy Garoppolo's contract, while he is very highly paid, and at one point he had the mantle of highest paid quarterback in the league for 3 weeks, it's a very, very manageable contract to get out of. The cap hit to get out of Jimmy Garoppolo's deal for the 49ers is not that crazy. It's only a few million bucks. What if the San Francisco 49ers decided to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo and sign lifelong San Francisco 49er fan and native of the Bay Area and free agent Tom Brady to play quarterback?
I don't think that's the best move for San Francisco. I think they have a lot of really good things going for them. One of the things they don't necessarily have going for them is an incredibly fast or accomplished wide receiver group. And that's been the same issue that the New England Patriots have right now. So I think that San Francisco, he'd have more to work with. But a lot of what creates opportunity in San Francisco is the outside zone run and the bootleg, that boot action, which Brady doesn't have to be a super sleek athlete to pull that off. You saw Peyton Manning pull it off with Gary Kubiak's
Matt
offense
Schaub.
To a certain degree. Schaub, right, but Schaub before his Liz Frank was a lot more mobile than Brady is right now. And I think after the Liz Frank injury annoys me because I hear all the time about how it shouldn't be a big deal, and yet it seems like it's affected several athletes.
Yeah.
Like Schaub had a good year after the Liz Frank, but that was as the defense was turning the ball over a bunch and everything, and then it just seemed to coincide somewhat with
he turned into a pumpkin genuine, at the end of that year.
Yeah, his genuine decline.
Yeah.
But I just think the offense would have to change too much, and I think if Kyle Shanahan has to modify his offense too much to fit Tom Brady, I know we already had this discussion with Gary Kubiak and Peyton Manning, but let's remember that Peyton Manning, it's not like Peyton Manning was having his best years as a quarterback with that Gary Kubiak offense.
They won that Super Bowl in spite of Peyton Manning. He got benched during the season for Brock Osweiler.
Well, he's injured.
Yeah, but Brock held the job for a little while. Remember, Brock was in a game in San Diego and turned the ball over a bunch of times. They brought Peyton in.
Yeah.
At the end of the
year. But it wasn't, Peyton was always going to come back. It was a matter of proving that he was healthy enough.
Okay.
So it was, I think that, because I don't want to go too far with that. I think a lot of the times people would say, well, look, anybody could make that throw that Peyton made.
Yeah.
With that offense, but no, Peyton got them to that throw.
Yeah.
Peyton would make the checks beforehand and make the adjustments to where the easy throws were there.
No doubt.
Where Brock Osweiler wouldn't necessarily do it.
Yep.
I just think that they're in a different position in San Francisco right now where of the multiple different things they could do to move forward for the next decade, a short-term solution like Tom Brady isn't the answer for them.
I listened in on some San Francisco sports radio yesterday on 95.7 out there, which is our sister station. And Brady's name never came up on the radio there, but they are furious with Jimmy Garoppolo. They're the listeners that I heard, the caller, they took a lot of calls.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Garoppolo was getting skewered on San Francisco radio. So I do think, not that you should make moves because of this reason, but and they were, let's face facts. They were 13-3. They were 11 minutes away from winning the Super Bowl. If they convert a third down, if they stop a third down, if they stop Tyreek Hill from getting a 44-yard catch, they probably win the Super Bowl. So this is not a team where you look at it, you go, okay, well, we need to do a complete teardown and facelift. But I think it's a fair question to wonder that when nut-cutting time rolls around and you need Jimmy Garoppolo to make a play, because more often than not, if you're competing with those types of stakes at that level, your quarterback needs to make a play at some point.
Yeah.
Jimmy Garoppolo had 3 or 4 chances to make plays to clinch a Super Bowl for the 49ers, and it wasn't even like it was a dropped pass or it was the wrong play call. He was sailing balls. He looked terrible. He's getting balls batted down at the line of scrimmage.
This would be really interesting if you were to take Tom Brady and put him in San Francisco. A lot of it would follow almost the exact same outline that it was with Peyton Manning and Gary Kubiak, where they kind of had to have a meeting of the minds and mix and meld some. You'd have an entire offseason to do it. Tom Brady would have to show up for OTAs and everything, and I think he understands that. These last couple of years, he hasn't. And he's been kind of in, hey, I'm in family mode in the offseason. Yeah. I would wonder, that's a conversation they're actually going to have, which is weird to think of because Tom Brady forever was known as the ultimate workaholic. Whichever coach is going to talk to Tom Brady is going to have to say, hey, you're going to be here, right? Are you full bore into this? Because if Tom Brady somehow has the notion that he's going to be able to follow the same thing he did with the Patriots, that's almost a non-starter.
Yeah.
That's no matter how great he was, he's not at that age now where he can just skate by showing up during training camp. He's got to train these receivers. And he's also got to get the lingo down and everything.
It's interesting with respect. We're talking about just a hypothetical of Tom Brady going to the 49ers. Clearly a team that's set up to compete for a Super Bowl. It sounds like to me, Seth, what you were saying at the outset of this, because I always think, okay, from a relationship like this, which will clearly be a relationship of convenience at the end of some guy's career, who stands more to gain from a Tom Brady San Francisco 49er partnership? And it sounds like from what you're saying, Brady stands a lot more to gain than the 49ers stand to gain.
Well, at the same time,
Tom Brady steps into a better situation potentially to win a Super Bowl than he has in New England right now.
Right, but I'm sitting here and I'm wondering and I'm thinking, okay, that's if Tom Brady isn't the problem, or at least part of the problem in New England. Because if we look at the wide receiving core in San Francisco, it's not, I don't think, markedly better than what he had in New England. I think one of the differences with Tom Brady...
He does have Kittle.
Oh, he has a tight end. Yeah. Okay, that's okay. I was thinking of just wide receivers. You're exactly right. Yeah. He has now running back, and how much does it matter in Kyle Shanahan's system versus New England? They've got more overall talent at running back in terms of guys that are multi-dimensional threats also.
Yep.
But Kittle is a big, big difference. Boy, and he's got to look at that and think that's enticing. But I think that Brady, again... I've always felt that one of Brady's biggest strengths as a quarterback is that he's probably the best wide receivers coach in the league. Hmm. He gets those guys. He takes guys who play above and beyond their natural ability because he gets them indoctrinated into that system. They have all these option routes. They adjust to coverages and everything. And that's really hard to get working the way Brady does, but he just has such high expectations. So when Brady has decided not to be there in the spring these last couple of years, it's been, in my opinion, that's been a big deal. Yeah. Because what did we always say about the Patriots' way and why they were good? It was because one of the reasons was that they worked their asses off at it. And the biggest and most important cog in your offense the last couple of years hasn't been there. So when Philip Dorsett and N'Keal Harry and all these other guys are trying to get worked into the fold, he's not there kind of training those guys. And N'Keal Harry's running the wrong routes during the regular season. How much of that could have been accelerated if Brady had been there working with him during mini camps and OTAs?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I think one of the other things, too, independent of San Francisco, whoever it would be, and by the way, the Raiders are the favorite right now at 3-1, the Chargers 4-1, Tampa Bay at 7-1. Those all sound like reasonable places for Tom Brady to land if he doesn't go back to New England. The heavy favorite is he still goes back to New England on some kind of deal, and maybe this is just him trying to leverage more money out of the Patriots because he's been underpaid for a long time based on what his success level has been. One of the other things I've seen, Seth, is that whoever signs Tom Brady has to embrace this whole TB12 deal that he's got going on, this training regimen that he has. But it's a training regimen that in New England comes along with actual brick and mortar, right?
Right.
Like he's got a TB12 center.
Yeah, yeah, they're across from the facility or near the facility.
Right.
And
some have said make the Chargers maybe a slight favorite because they've got that they're tenants in that new big park, you know, not just a stadium, but it's an entire area. It's an entire esplanade that the Rams have essentially built over.
So
there.
They've got
they
to
put a TB12 in there.
They've got to be one of his exercise cult members,
I guess. Yeah.
Like they have to have his guru who was once
pimping concussion water.
I want to say fined, but suspended, whatever it was. He was reprimanded by the FDA for claiming that his supplements could cure cancer. Right. He tried to sell a concussion water. All these things. Tom Brady's exercise guru is now in on him with this TB12 method. Right. And that needs to be part of it? Well, I wonder, what does that mean? Because you can't... It gets super complicated in terms of the cap if somehow they're going to get a contract with TB12 or something as part of his employment deal. They can't do that. They must just mean that they're not going to mess with him the way Belichick messed with him.
Maybe so.
Remember, Belichick banned his exercise guru from the facility.
I do.
So he wants, Tom Brady's going to want his exercise guru to be able to come with him.
Yeah.
And also criticize the trainers and everything. These exercise gurus always love to criticize the strength coaches and the trainers on the team.
Are we at a stage in Tom Brady's career where we're asking ourselves, is Tom Brady worth the trouble that comes with Tom Brady? You know what I mean? Like if this TB12 thing is a big deal... If there's certain things he needs in an offense, you know what I mean? Like, especially at a place like San Francisco where Shanahan clearly has a code that he rolls by with his offense.
Yeah.
Are we at that stage with Brady? Have his skills diminished enough? And they've diminished for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, still very good. Are we at a stage with Tom Brady where we're asking ourselves, boy, is the greatest quarterback of all time worth the trouble that he brings with him?
Worth the circus? He's like a sober Joe Namath.
Right.
You got... It's the equivalent of Joe Namath standing on the sidelines injured with a fur coat on. Like, what are we doing with this guy? This guy's a pain in the ass.
Right.
So it's a sober and responsible Joe Namath.
Yeah.
Is he worth it? Alex Guerrero, the exercise trainer, selling his pills and supplements and whatnot. Do we really need all this right now?
I think for some teams he is. Yeah. I don't know that for the 49ers he is. If you're the 49ers, you got to take a step back and go, okay, we were 10 minutes away from winning a Super Bowl. But I think for a team like the Chargers, he's 100% worth it. You've got no foothold in the market that you're in.
Hmm.
You're moving into a new stadium. You're a second-class citizen in your own stadium and in your own town. I think he would be worth it for them. And that's a roster that – I think that's a roster that can – if Tom Brady is 75% of peak Brady, let's say, That's a roster that can win football games.
I think he's a guy, though, that understands and knows how important being in the right environment has been for him. And is he going to go to a franchise where a guy like Phillip Rivers could never really get them over the hump? And Phillip Rivers is an excellent quarterback. And I know Brady's going to think he's better than Rivers, but I don't think Brady probably thinks he's better than Rivers in his prime at this point, right? Brady in his prime versus Rivers in his prime, sure.
Yeah.
Brady right now versus Rivers in his prime, I'd say no way. And that's an organization that's never been able to really put a good offensive line around
that's
Phillip Rivers.
That's a great point.
Yeah. They've been seemingly snake-bitten in various different aspects. I wonder if he thinks that that's the right organization for him to go to. It would make a lot more sense for him to go to the 49ers. I almost think that if Brady were to go to the 49ers, he'd be willing to take a heavily incentive-laden deal. And he might be willing to do that regardless. The Patriots can say, hey, they're going to pay me $30 million. All right, at this stage in his career, none of that really matters from a true financial standpoint. If he were willing to go and take like almost a completely incentive-laden deal, like some ridiculous $10 million base plus $20 million incentives or something, would the 49ers say, you know what, we can't turn this down. We got to do this, and see you later. Hasta la bye-bye to Jimmy Garoppolo. We'll draft a quarterback in the second round or something and plan for the future that way.
Is there a market for Jimmy Garoppolo if they decided to do that?
What
would they traded a second round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo when he was still relatively unknown. I mean, people knew who he was because he was on the Patriots, but he'd only started two games at that point.
I think because you can trade for him, you don't have any of that. When you trade for him, all you have is the base salary and none of it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what they get for Tannehill. They got a second rounder for Tannehill, didn't they not?
Who, the Dolphins?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I'll check, but keep talking.
Yeah, so I think there's a market for him. And if it's for Tom Brady, and if you feel like Tom Brady's definitely going to give you two more years, I might have to do that.
Yeah. To be clear, Tannehill, I think, is at this point now a better quarterback than Garoppolo. But when they traded him, when the Dolphins traded Tannehill, he wasn't anywhere near Garoppolo's.
Yeah.
You know, they were dumping Tannehill. The trade for traded by the Dolphins with a sixth-round pick to the Titans for a seventh-round pick and a 2024th-round pick.
Oh, there you go.
So couple of, you know, basically a flip-flop of some back-end round picks and a middle round
pick. If they were to trade, let's see. Now, if the Titans were to sign Tom Brady, they could franchise tag Ryan Tannehill and probably flip him. You're not supposed to franchise tag somebody specifically just to trade them. Mm-hmm. It would be hard to argue that they weren't planning on trading Ryan Tannehill by franchise tagging him
right. If
they had also signed Tom Brady. So I wonder what might happen there.
Who would you trade Garoppolo to? There aren't that many teams that are in the market for a quarterback, but the one that popped into my head was Chicago, who Mitchell Trubisky obviously has not progressed the way that they would hoped he had, and he went to Eastern Illinois. He's from that part of the country.
And
I think if you're the Bears, who were in the playoffs 2 years ago, you were out of the playoffs last year, that's maybe a potential sellable solution to your fan base. Like, hey, now we feel like we can compete with the Vikings and the Packers in this division.
Matt Nagy. You know who Matt Nagy's really screwed over? Eric Bieniemy.
Nagy, the former OC.
Because Matt Nagy was the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs. He gets a job in Chicago. And now, after a couple of years, the shine has worn off of Nagy. And I think there's probably a lot of people that wonder, okay, how much of the offense in Kansas City, if it wasn't Nagy, obviously, how much of it is now Bieniemy compared to just how much of it is Andy Reid?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think Bieniemy should be getting more interviews than he is, for sure. But I wonder if Bieniemy had come before Nagy, maybe it would have been different.
Yeah.
And then there's obviously there's a whole race element. There's no, like, getting around that. There's just how many potential, but the Rooney rule's not helping Bieniemy.
Yeah.
Just however many, whatever that implicit bias is working against him.
Yeah. So we were talking about Tom Brady. By the way, the other teams on this list that matter for Brady, the odds of where he could end up: Tennessee 16-1, Jacksonville 28-1. Those are the Indianapolis is actually fairly short odds at 9-1. Those are the other AFC South teams. So I was thinking about this too as I was listening to a bunch of screaming, raging, maniacal Bay Area callers to talk radio out there. The Jacksonville Jaguars get a lot of heat for not drafting Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson back in 2017. They drafted Leonard Fournette instead. I wonder if San Francisco will similarly start to get some heat about not drafting Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, especially considering they just lost to Mahomes in the Super Bowl. If you remember, they were picking second that year. They traded out of the two spot, moved down to three with Chicago. Chicago drafts Mitchell Trubisky. And then I believe with third pick, the 49ers drafted Solomon Thomas out of Stanford. I think I'm correct on that.
Yep.
Back in 2017, they could have drafted Mahomes or Watson as well. Instead, they reportedly sat tight because the plan was to sign Kirk Cousins that offseason. Shanahan had a history with Cousins from his time in Washington as the offensive coordinator there. So they were just going to sit tight and sign Cousins. Instead, the opportunity presented itself to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo at the trade deadline. So they went with Garoppolo instead. But I wonder if they're going to start to get some heat now. They weren't even looking at Mahomes and Watson.
You're exactly right about that. Why is it? It's interesting which teams get the scrutiny and the acrimony from all of it. Because the Jaguars, I think just because they're the Jacksonville Jaguars, don't get as much national attention. So they kind of skated by until people started bringing it up this year when it looked like Coughlin might get fired. Then people were clued into something that we in the AFC South have been talking about the whole time. Like, wow, they took Leonard Fournette instead of these two guys. It's just absolutely insane.
And extended Blake Bortles.
But San Francisco with Pat Mahomes and with Kyle Shanahan running that offense. Oh, my gosh. What am I going to say? That it could be better than last year's, 2018's Kansas City offense? I don't know. The 49ers right now are a better overall football team. I think they're just constructed better and more solidly throughout. I think the defense is more consistently solid. We'll see about next year with the Chiefs defense because they made a lot of improvement. But, yeah, I think it's pretty obvious. You put Pat Mahomes on that team versus whoever the Chiefs would have.
Or Deshaun.
Right. Let's see. If you put Pat Mahomes on the 49ers and Deshaun versus the Chiefs, that would have been a Super Bowl for the ages.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about, the young quarterbacks that are taking the league by storm.
Well, I promise you this. I mean, one of the things that Shanahan was catching a lot of heat for on this talk radio I was listening to was his decision-making at the end of the half, which you criticized him for roundly yesterday at the end of the first half, where he went super conservative and wound up with not putting points on the board. He's not using that tact if Mahomes or Watson are his quarterback.
Right. He does. It was clear that he did not
trust.
You're
attacking with either of those guys.
I think last week, after the championship game where they only threw the ball eight times, I think it was easy to say, all right, well, look, the run game was so effective and you had a lead. Why bother passing if you're running on him as well as you are? So it made sense that they weren't passing and maybe he wasn't trying to protect Garoppolo. It's really hard after that Super Bowl to say that Shanahan wasn't protecting Garoppolo.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're exactly right. At the end of the first half, where I've seen people try to defend this by saying, well, look, you got to remember that the Chiefs were trying to pin them down with the punt, and they weren't able to down that punt inside the five. But if they had, then all of a sudden, you've got this situation where you're just trying to get space to punt, and then maybe you're punting the ball back to Mahomes at midfield and he has he has 30 plus seconds left on the clock. At that point though, I don't think the Chiefs had many timeouts left.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that it's way too conservative. You've got to try to score points. And at that point too, I think that the 49ers defense have been playing well enough that he should have been respectful of Mahomes, but are you really telling me your plan at the beginning of the half would have been like, well, let's just hope that we can get the ball back with a minute and a half so we don't do anything?
Yeah.
Is that the plan going into it? We're gonna have the ball back with 1:30 and then we'll have him right where we want him because then Mahomes won't be able to have the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it this way. I've never seen a good team use that as their strategy at the end of a half.
That's a Dumberone tactic.
Yeah,
remember he did that at the end
of the
AFC Championship game.
That's right. Yeah. Garoppolo is not to be completely trusted, but he's certainly above the Blake Bortles line to where you should be able to trust him to do the right thing at the end of the half. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.